and welcome to another Takeover episode of It's Okay to Feel, a NAMI OC podcast. We are Takeover hosts for today, Evelyn and Emily Tran. We are 16-year-old mental health enthusiasts and twins from Orange County.
We are graduates of NAMI OC's Media Masterclass, which teaches the basics of podcasting and growing a social media presence. Thank you so much for tuning in and spending time with us today.
Today, we're going to talk about trichotillomania and our mental health journey. It's Okay to Feel is for informational, educational, entertainment purposes only, and is not a substitute for medical or psychiatric advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
It's Okay to Feel is funded by the Orange County Healthcare Agency, Behavioral Health Services, Coronavirus Aid Relief and Economic Security Act. And now on to the show.
For any of you that don't know what trichotillomania is, it's a type of impulse control disorder that causes the person to have like an irresistible urge to pull out their hair, either it be from like their scalp, their eyelashes, or their eyebrows. And it's linked to depression, ADHD, OCD, and like anxiety. And it's like one of many other impulse control disorders, such as having the uncontrollable urge to like bite your nails or pick at your skin. And all these disorders fall under the umbrella term BFRB, which stands for body-focused repetitive behavior. My trichotillomania journey started in seventh grade when I used to pull out the hair on my scalp as an unhealthy coping mechanism triggered by like the stress and anxiety I was dealing with as a result of like my home life becoming exponentially more difficult to deal with. And it also derived from juggling the stresses of school and the anxiety of going through puberty. And to me at the time, pulling out my hair felt good. Like it was a behavior that would just help me cope with stress. Like that's all it was to me. And I didn't realize that it was like unhealthy or anything. So like at first I didn't notice that since I was so unaware of it, I didn't notice that I was actually actively pulling out my hair. And then like my friends at school would ask me why I kept doing it because it looked like it hurt. But like trichotillomania is a mental illness that causes you to be like unaware when you're pulling. And I didn't know why like it was a bad thing because it just felt good at the time. And I was pulling my hair and it would help me cope with stress and anxiety that I was dealing with. And that's all I saw it as. Like it felt relieving to pull my hair. And at this time, I was told a lot that I had like anger issues, and that was because of like what was going on at home. So I would always bring those stressful thoughts to school with me, and it became extremely hard to focus in school. And by pulling out my hair, it helped me like almost like block out those thoughts and distract myself from them. So I went to my doctor like in the annual checkup, and it was like obvious that I had patches of hair loss. And now my doctor was telling me that it was a serious problem, and like she even referred me to a therapist. And my friends and family were now taking notice of like the bald patches on my head and my impulsive pulling. So like this made me even more stressed out because I didn't even know like if it was normal or not. And I just thought that I was like psychotic and like crazy for dealing with this. And it made me like feel so alone because people were telling me that this wasn't normal and I knew nothing about what I was dealing with. And like, I really had no idea. Like, I didn't even know if it was considered a mental illness or not. I was so confused and scared that, like, I could never stop, like, pulling my hair. Like, this would go on forever. So, like, as a preteen, I didn't understand, like, how I could have zero control over these impulsive and, like, subconscious thoughts that, like, dictated my hair pulling. And I was just, like, so desperately wanted to change, like, this behavior. But I had just no control over it. So I felt powerless and like so weak that even if I wanted to, I couldn't even stop this behavior that was hurting me. So I just felt like a mentally damaged person that couldn't be helped and like didn't deserve to be normal. So like I felt so stupid for not having control over like saving myself from like being bald, and it made me like hate this part of myself. And it made me realize like how little control I have over like these subconscious behaviors. And I hated how I looked, and my hair just became my biggest insecurity. So I remember like in school, I was so insecure when I would like put my hair up in a bun because you could really see like the patches of hair loss and where I was balding, and like the baby hairs that were like forming from like excessive pulling would get in the way, and I like would constantly have to wear headbands like whenever I put my hair up.
Yeah, and what I would do was I would just pull, like, yank large amounts of hair, like, from areas that I knew wouldn't be noticeable. And I didn't realize that, like,
I didn't think that my habits of like yanking these like large amounts of hair from out of my head was when I was stressed out was like a result of like my anxiety or my depression. And when, even though I did notice like those bald patches, I didn't think that it was serious enough for me to look further into it or ask for help or to do my own medical research to see if this was normal or abnormal. And I didn't think it was big of a deal enough that like I should put any care or attention to prevent myself from pulling, or it was even like worth me going to my parents and having a conversation to them about it. And I think a lot of people, including me, don't realize that their habits are actual mental disorders. And also I noticed that people my age in high school often misunderstand or have this misconception of what really are just bad habits are disorders. And there's this blurry line where people confuse the two sometimes. And that can lead to people saying that like something like biting your nails when you're nervous or picking your skin means they have a disorder that falls under the body focused repetitive behavior umbrella. And like it also can be like the opposite, where people are saying that they have depression when really they're just sad. And this also relates to like when people sometimes confuse the concept of having depression and feeling depressed, because sad feelings and feeling down from time to time is caused by different circumstances. And most of the time, you know where your sadness is coming from, and it comes and goes when you want it to. Whereas depression is a medical disorder that does not go away when you want it to. And it can linger up to like 2 consecutive weeks until the point where it hinders and interferes with your personal relationships, like your ability to do work and function, even like affect the way you do day-to-day tasks. Like I found that for me, it feels like depression feels like this unexplainable numbness where I usually feel extremely guilty and worthless. And like, it's unbearable. I just want to like sleep all day. Or there's some days when I'm totally like restless and face these like sleepless nights and insomnia, and I have to distract myself in unhealthy ways that aren't self-care. And it's so much harder to understand than a physical illness, like heart disease or like high cholesterol, because it's a mental illness and there's not like a physical wound or like some sort of test that you can take that like definitively like tells you that you have this sort of mental illness. And it can take a really long time for people to even understand that like they have it, like they have depression or any mental illness. And when someone appears to be at their best, they might be like actually at their worst. And it was hard not to open up to friends and family like about what I was going through, because even though I had my sister, I felt like at least if I was a good person to others and worked hard enough, then my symptoms would just go away. And I didn't always look at my mental illness as a strength, but like as I grew older and started to like experience daily life with mental illness like depression, it felt like this driving force that actually helped me progress in life and drove me forward instead of holding me back. It wasn't always like that, and it took a lot for me to start thinking that way, because that was the only mindset that helped me stay motivated. I had to fight this like negative thing with a positive mindset, or I wouldn't be able to move forward and look towards the future in an optimistic point of view, because like I used to always suppress my symptoms, but I learned to use them as something that isn't going to tear me down, but it isn't necessarily going to make you weaker, but allow you to, or allow me at least, to build myself up to be mentally stronger.
Yeah, so with my sister and I, we just felt that it wasn't worth it to like seek professional help. Because I remember being at the doctor's, and like when I was told that I should like seek professional help, it helped me realize how serious my mental illness really was. And I remember that when I heard that, I didn't find it as a relief, like that there was a mental health expert that like could help me. But I rather like looked at it as like a wake up call that told me that if I can't start helping myself and really prioritizing my mental health, like it will only further deteriorate, and like then like no one would be able to help me. So like this mindset was mainly due to the fact that I have like Asian American parents who I knew would like never take me to a therapist.
Yeah. There's definitely that stigma around the Asian American demographic, especially like my high school at least. And at first I was really scared that my parents would think that like I was victimizing myself to get attention if I came up to them and tried to have a conversation about my mental illness. And I always thought that like I was a disappointment for feeling this way because they gave me everything that they didn't have growing up. So how could I be this way? I always asked myself that. And I would believe that they don't deserve to carry these emotional burdens with me, like if I shared what I was feeling with them. And I would feel guilty and selfish if I opened up to them because I don't want them to feel like they did something wrong. And I don't want them to face that burden that I had a mental illness or that they didn't raise me right when it's not their fault. And in the Asian American community, like many of my friends I know are scared to open up about their mental health issues because they feel like they're going to be considered as weak to their parents, or weak because the traditional perception of mental illnesses in many Asian cultures is that you have to be like it's crazy. Like you have to be crazy to have a mental illness. But mental illness can have many faces, and it doesn't mean like someone that looks like their life is perfect and that they have their whole life together. Like if they seem and appear fine, then people might think that they don't have a mental illness at all, but people don't realize, especially like in Asian American communities, that like mental illness doesn't have a face, and you can be from the outside looking perfect and still be facing a serious mental illness and just feeling the worst you possibly have ever felt, or being at the worst point in your life. And I know my friends, when I talk to my friends about mental health, they feel like their parents might not take them seriously. And that hurts to like have to prove yourself to your own parents and not be heard and not have your own family listen to you and be that pair of ears for your feelings. I know my friend was going through something serious and her mom just shrugged it off. Whatever she had to say, she just shrugged it off and repeated to her that she was fine and that there was nothing wrong with her, because they don't want others to know, like their family and friends, that they have a daughter that has a mental health issue, because that might be looked down upon by their friends and family, like they didn't do a good job raising her. And that stigma is honestly heartbreaking. And with any group of people, not just the Asian American demographic, parents might not always be the only people you can talk to. And it's worth reaching out to more people to seek help, especially psychologists and therapists, and find someone you have a relationship with and find who you trust and feel comfortable with. And sometimes that might not be your immediate family, and that's okay. It doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah. So how I found out that I had trichotillomania was one day when I was researching bipolar disorder on WebMD for like a presentation I was doing for my wellness group. And like under like the topic where like it talks about the symptoms of bipolar disorder, there was this link that was talking about trichotillomania. And I clicked on it because it had like a picture of a woman pulling her hair out. And then I was like, wait, could this be what I have? And then I just keep going back to that. I'm just like so grateful for that day, because if I didn't see and like click on that link and like read about it, I wouldn't even realize that I had trichotillomania, that I would still feel so alone, that like I'm the only one who has this mental illness, and that there aren't people out there. This is actually a very common disorder, and that 1 in 20 people are dealing with BFRB. And I just feel like it's the way that I went about it and figured out that I had trichotillomania. I just don't want any other person out there who is dealing with this to find out the same way. Like, if it wasn't for that, I'd still be that same person I was in seventh grade. So, like, I remember the week after my doctor checkup was, like, Thanksgiving break. And, like, when she told me, you know, that this is a serious problem, I should probably go seek professional help with, like, a therapist. Knowing that Thanksgiving break, like a couple weeks after that checkup, it would probably be one of my only opportunities to really decompress before like I reached a point where I didn't think I could help myself. I forced to teach myself self-care and stay disciplined with it. Like the stresses of my personal life didn't automatically get better, but I controlled how I responded to it, because ultimately that is all I had control of. Like my thoughts controlled how I reacted to my triggers, of the thoughts that triggered me pulling out my hair.
and some were more intense than others. And like, I really started to research self-care methods, and like, my biggest mistake was not seeing how much seeking professional help would matter in my recovery journey. Like, I tried to do it all by myself, and I was lucky enough to have the support from my sister, because like, talking to someone is like always progress. And I'm still
always.
Mm-hmm, I'm still tempted to pull out my hair to this day. Like, I'm still not fully recovered. And I truly think that a part of that is because I didn't push to seek professional help early on. So like, I really started to discover the self-care methods that helped me. So that entire, I always talk about how that Thanksgiving break, that 1 week, changed my entire recovery journey. Because after that week, I saw it's not always like an instant, like you could actively and like physically see yourself like instantly recover and get better. It's always gradual. But I remember, like, I didn't pull my hair in like a sense where my behavior would be pulling my hair and then like rolling it up into like a wad of like hair and just like repeating that. Just like pull, like, not even, sometimes I wouldn't even, and triggers wouldn't trigger me to pull my hair, like that feeling of pulling my hair. It would just be so that I could pull my hair so I can like roll it up into balls. Like, that was my, like, my behavior. And I realized that after I just focused on myself and prioritized my self-care for that one Thanksgiving break, after that, I went back to school, and whenever I would have like this, like, I would like have a stressful thought that would usually trigger me pulling my hair, I realized that I would just like aggressively comb it, not like actually, and I was no longer rolling up my hair in balls. And that was so big for me. Like, that's to this day, that's still like the biggest like milestone in my recovery journey with trichotillomania. So like, during this period of time, I really went back to like putting all my heart into like the activity that anchors me and like helps me feel like my truest self. And that's like doing fitness, like whether that be like powerlifting or weightlifting or going like long trail runs. And my favorite version of myself is when all I have to focus on is like pushing through the pain, like the physical pain of like working out, like whatever workout I'm doing that day, and like ignoring those voices that are yelling at me to give up. I remind myself that like, I'm not a subject to like my illness, because when I'm working out, I feel in control of my mind and that I have power over it, so it doesn't hurt me. Like, having a goal to prove to myself that I'm like mentally stronger than I think and to become fitter, it keeps me present, like in the moment and in control of my anxious thoughts that are usually like racing and distracting. Like, when I'm working out, that's all I'm focused on is like the movements and my ability to be like mentally resilient and disciplined when I'm like in physical pain. And I completely immerse myself into the activity, and being so hyper focused and happy, that like really becomes the only time where I'm like not pulling my hair, because my thoughts are so consumed with like doing what I love that my subconscious and impulsive triggers are like deafened. Like, the physical pain I feel like when I'm working out is like really one of the only times where I'm in control of my my thoughts and become like resilient against those voices. Like, I truly feel and become in tune with my emotions at times when I feel numb and so overwhelmed and like out of control when I'm like lost inside my mental illness. Like, being physically stronger has proved to myself that I am capable of being mentally strong enough to overcome my mental illness.
Yeah, and everybody has different ways to cope with their mental health issues. And what I'm so lucky to have is that I've gone through my mental health journey alongside, or so far, I've gone through my entire mental health journey alongside my twin sister. And it's such a special experience because we have the same mental illness, trichotillomania. And the fact that we're able to support each other and talk to each other when we're going through really low points of our lives, and I feel like it would have been impossible sometimes to get through like some of the things that we've gotten through if it wasn't for my sister. Like, if she wasn't there to support me, be there for me, I don't know what like I would have done. And like, there's sometimes when
I feel like my sister and I are like on a two-person team, like against the world. And that support system is so strong. And the fact that I'm a twin is honestly like the greatest blessing in my life, because I feel so comfortable to share what I'm feeling with my sister. And we always end up learning so much from each other. And I think it's so funny because we're twins, but we're so different. And, you know, it's just like, in general, like, I just feel like, especially with mental health, just observing the world around you and talking to people, like, that's like the biggest life lesson. It's like the, like, observing the world around you is the best teacher in life. And I just feel like I've learned so much with my mental health and how to grow, you know, mentally healthier and mentally stronger from the people around me and the people that surround me in my life, my close friends and family. And Evelyn touched upon self-care. And I think that one thing I wanna say is that, like, for me at least, I felt that at the beginning of my mental health journey, I used to not understand the difference between distractions versus self-care. Because I started to develop these really unhealthy distractions that, like, I didn't realize that, like, I need to prioritize and really stay disciplined with my self-care. And because that is what, like, helped me, like, use these stressful thoughts that were constantly, like, circulating in my mind as a result of, like, my compulsive disorders, and use those thoughts that I was constantly trying to run away from to make me actually more mentally resilient. And, like, self-care can be, you know, hanging out and binging a show for a day and slowing down, taking time out for yourself. But when you're, like, watching, this is from my own experience, my own personal experience, when you're, like, watching Netflix for, like, 5 or 6 hours a day, day in and day out, that's when it gets to a point where you have to ask yourself, like, am I just distracting myself from what I'm experiencing instead of, like, facing these thoughts, like, head on? And, like, it took me a really long time to realize that, like, maybe just, like, drowning out all of these thoughts that I should actually, you know, face and, like, fight, and these intrusive thoughts that I should actually, like, deal with, I shouldn't ignore them. Like, I shouldn't try to forget about them, because it's healthy to, like, attack those thoughts head on. And, you know, I think that self-care is also an act of love for the people in your life, so you can be more available to them. And I just want to say, like, it's hard to practice self-care, especially with COVID. Like, when just, you know, a lot of us are stuck inside our houses.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And just, like, the walls are closing in on you, and you don't, like, you don't always have that option of going outside. And, you know, school and home life merges, and I used to be able to leave school, Emily, at school and not let school mingle with my hobbies and stuff. But now when I take it home with me, it's all I can think about. And it's hard to regulate when the physical environment you're in doesn't change. And it's really hard to deal with depression with online school, because it's making me procrastinate more, for sure, especially when I'm just, I feel super depressed, and I just like lack that self-motivation so much that sometimes the only thing that is pushing me to get things done is the pressure of, like, a due date in an hour. So I learned that it's not selfish at all to prioritize self-care and compassion before you can focus on helping others, because I found that I like the version of myself better when I love myself and could support and be there emotionally for my friends when I wasn't dealing with distractions and self-loathing behavior.
Yeah, for sure. Like, with online school, for me at least, the same computer that I do, like, all my classes on, is the same computer where I watch Netflix, where, like, I watch, like, movies to, like, kind of decompress. And the room that I sleep in is also the room that I have all of, like, my study materials. So the first thing that I see when I wake up is just my life revolves around school. And, like, during this COVID lockdown, rather than seeing, like, staying inside all the time and being alone with myself is a scary thing, I learned to look at it as, like, the perfect opportunity to really practice being alone with myself and understand the thoughts that, like, have haunted me. Like Emily was saying, those thoughts that
constantly try to avoid and run away from. Like, it was so easy to just run away from these stressful thoughts before COVID because there were just so many distractions that you could engage in. Like, you can just go out with your friends, go to parties and socialize and, like, be in public spaces and throw yourself into the troubles of, like, other people's lives instead of, like, dealing with your own. So, like, I've been practicing this self-care method more and more. And so what used to scare me became, like, my strength. Like, personally, my favorite ways to practice being alone with my thoughts and looking into them is through practicing mindfulness, like, in an ice bath or at, like, a secluded location where the sounds of, like, nature, like, waves crashing, like, blacks out, like, any distractions, or doing, like, long, monotonous, and, like, mentally exhausting and during, like, cardio workouts. I always try to remind myself that prioritizing my self-care isn't being selfish. I always try to, that's something that I ingrained in my mind because I'm so grateful that Emily is always there to keep me accountable of that.
Yeah.
And
it's not selfish to focus on yourself. It's not selfish to not want to hang out with your friends and just spend time with yourself and want to be alone. It's actually better to feel that way because you have to take care of your own mental health for not only yourself, but also the people around you and in your life. Because like Evelyn said, like, I really disliked the version of myself that I was when I was around my friends, when I was not loving myself and I had this self-deprecating thoughts and this hatred inside of me that affected me with so many aspects of life, with like body confidence and the way I socialize. So definitely self-care equals self-love.
Yeah. So like I started shifting my mindset to focus on myself, and it helped me figure out, understand like what was going on inside my head. And like in return, that allowed me to fully commit my focus and energy and attention onto managing and dealing with my external problems and like helping other people, my family, and what they were going through. Because before I was ignoring and neglecting how I felt in my mental health, like while dealing with my external problems at the time in like my family relationships and my social relationships, and like really looking into myself makes external stresses exponentially more manageable. Because before I would just start becoming frustrated and angry, like when other people came to me with their stresses, I had to really understand and like become in tune with what I was mentally capable of and what I had inside of me so that I wouldn't feel overwhelmed by my external stresses. Because dealing with the stress of my environment at home and at school became less of like a balancing act.
And when you said that you had to like look into yourself, it's actually like healthy to deal with those intrusive thoughts and talk back to them and deal with them, because it used to be so scary for me. And actually sometimes it still is to like go on these like really long car rides and airplane trips. Yeah. Because I feared being alone and bored, because I knew that I would have to like fight these negative thoughts just like circulating in my mind where I wouldn't have any distractions, and I would talk to myself and like relive these traumatic experiences and memories. And actually doing this, just like dealing with these intrusive thoughts and talking back to them actually like helped me eventually move on from these traumatic experiences that I dealt with. And also like, you know, really dealing with yourself, just sitting alone and just really dealing with yourself. It's so scary. It's so scary to just like be there with yourself, just you and your own thoughts. And I used to be so scared of that, but I started to realize that like doing that helped me understand myself more, because I had these certain like epiphany moments that made me underestimate and doubt myself less. And it helped me build up my self-confidence and helped me shed my insecurity. And I learned that when you can deal with yourself more and not be scared of being alone and not be scared of being alone with your thoughts, because you think that like they're going to come back and haunt you. At least for me, I always feel like I just don't like sleeping is so scary to me. Sometimes I want to like, you know, be on my phone all night, and that's the only way I can fall asleep, because I have this insomnia where I just feel like I have to like deal with my thoughts before I can go to sleep with like
a sound mind. And but by doing so, it actually made me mentally more healthier because I started to trust myself more, and actually that led to self-confidence and not being afraid to be myself and embrace my individuality and uniqueness, no matter like how weird I was, because I always felt like I had the capability of that I was always going to love myself and I was always going to know my value and worth, because I didn't need the opinions of others to validate my own thoughts, because I felt more in tune with my emotions. And that you understand, when you understand yourself more, then you start to doubt yourself less. And that leads to more self-confidence, because I understood my feelings. I understand what my feelings were telling me. And that helped me let myself go instead of being such a rigid and closed up person that no one wanted to be around. I just became more of an open book and, you know, more approachable and welcoming. And those are all good things that came with, you know, you just being alone. And sometimes you don't realize that, you know, dealing with your mental health issues and your these thoughts that constantly just circulate your brain and just burden you, and all these worries and concerns, just dealing with them and attacking them, just like fighting back and like talking back to them, is actually a healthy thing. And like after that's like a practice that I came to find that really helped me and helped me develop this version of myself that I came to love. And I remember like it's just like I remember in middle school when, you know, when I would be, I wasn't necessarily shy, but I was definitely had a lot of social anxiety. Like the practice of like dealing with my own thoughts and talking back to them actually helped me combat this social anxiety. Because I would always like overthink what I would say, like whatever came out of my mouth. I always felt like it was not smart enough when I participated in class, or like I was scared that I would embarrass myself. And learning to deal with my own thoughts helped me understand more of what I was capable of, because when I found out that the reason why I was so scared to like do a presentation or a speech in front of class was because I felt like I was going to like spaz out, or whatever I was going to say was like unpredictable. Like I didn't want to like do something weird or uncalled for. And then I realized, like afterwards, like, oh my God, that was so embarrassing. And like, I was so scared of being embarrassed. And that came from my lack of confidence. And I started to build this self-confidence and self-love through dealing with myself. Because, you know, like when you do so, you know what your mind is capable of and what your potential is. And you start to love yourself more because you start to realize like, I'm worth more than I think I am. Like, I am smarter than I know. My thoughts are valuable and worth listening to. I trust myself more and I am confident. Like your insecurities start to dissolve and you shed that self-doubt and insecurity that's like, I trust what I am thinking. I trust what's coming out of my mouth. And I don't need to always prepare or consciously like premeditate everything I contribute to a conversation, because everything that I say can come out organically and intuitively. So I started to realize that I don't need to overthink things when I loved myself and trusted myself head on whatever I did. And I didn't need to like self-loathe and like self-deprecate or feel regretful and guilty when I did something so embarrassing and beat myself over it, because I didn't need to beat myself up over something that just comes out of my mouth. Like I just like had all this self-deprecating hatred and behavior inside of me that I needed to realize that I'm confident and secure with my thoughts, and that I'm 100% okay with not knowing what's coming next, not knowing what I'm going to do next, what, not knowing what's going to come out of my mouth next. I had to be so confident in my intelligence and not doubting myself because I think I'm not smart. And when I'm confident in what I say isn't dumb, I started to realize that it was because I loved myself and that there was value in what I had to say, because I am important and I matter, and whatever happens, I still love myself regardless. And I found that in that way, like I'm more outspoken and able to get myself out there more and approach more people. And I used to have that mindset that was like, people are going to hate me and my personality. So I was scared to make new friends. But then like, I became aware that I have to love myself. I have to love who I was. I had to love my personality because that builds confidence in
Everyone I know personally that is confident loves themselves so much that they don't need anyone else to tell them what version of themselves they can like or how they can act, because they love themselves and don't care if people think they're weird. They love who they are and they can be confident no matter what. And self-love is directly correlated to self-confidence, and that leads to being able to be emotionally connected with others and empathize with others and embrace your individuality and uniqueness and put yourself out there and make new friends and be open to new conversations. So I just feel like that's something I really wanted to touch upon, because a quote that I live by is like, just be confident and no one will question you.
Yeah, like I noticed that like I didn't want to be alone and vulnerable with my thoughts, like out of fear that if I looked into myself, I would hate myself.
Yeah.
But like what you said, like self-care, understanding why like I had certain emotions equals self-love. Like sometimes it's a scary thing to do, to like be alone and vulnerable to deal with your thoughts. Like now I learned to not be mad at myself for having like uncontrollable emotions that I don't know why happen because of my like subconscious impulsive behaviors because of trichotillomania. Or like be mad at myself about like where they came from, like where these emotions came from, because honestly, they happen when I'm like completely unaware. And I am not trying to be in control of what I have no control over. And just realizing that was so mentally freeing. And like now I understand my thoughts and I'm in control and like in tune. And like I'm not mentally stronger because I have control over my emotions. And I love myself now because I come to understand that they aren't the results of me being crazy or like not normal or like weak. And like my emotions being a part of like someone that I hate and aren't in control of, it's not like that perspective anymore. I've learned to realize that those emotions that I'm feeling are rather like a part of like who I am. I'm one with those emotions and in control of them. I learned to love my true self and not the person or like facade I put up to hide those emotions. Like I've learned to be comfortable with those emotions and not be afraid of being vulnerable and in like in tune with them, like really get to know them, so that like I understand that it helps me understand that this is my truest like raw self, and that like I start not to care like what people think, because like that's fully me, and if they can't accept that, then like that's not someone I want to be around or like surround myself with.
Yeah.
And like because I learned that faking a facade because like I don't want to show my true self like leads to self-hatred and like self-deprecating behavior. Like before, feelings were like a hindrance, and now I have learned to use them as like a strength to be in control of them and like achieve my personal goals, like and do well in school by being in control of my confidence and discipline, like to strengthen myself mentally and like help me be in tune with my capabilities. Like what you said, you learn about when you start to understand what you're capable of and your potential, you just gain so much more confidence. And addressing my stresses and triggers and like anxious thoughts like head on instead of creating an alternative coping mechanism was what I found was like a really beneficial result of practicing self-care. Like I've learned to not give in to those haunting and subconscious thoughts living like rent-free in my head. Like I used to be afraid of being alone with myself because then that would like trigger me to go into a downward spiral of overthinking to the point where it became dangerous because I would overthink and create so much doubt in myself because these like self-loathing thoughts and like insults to myself would flood my mind and I'll be like overwhelmed by reminder of like all of my traumatic memories and reasons to hate myself. And like this would lead me to like lose confidence in like being my authentic self because I would give in to these self-deprecating thoughts living rent-free in my head and take them too seriously and like personally like be like personally affected by what this like these like demons are like those voices in my head are telling me, like all these insults and like causing me to have self-doubt. So I'd be so insecure because of this. And like, I would always be afraid of like looking into my mind and my triggers and like why I had this mental illness, like out of fear that if I did, I would bring back like a traumatic memory or like recognize that my ability to be mentally resilient is too weak.
and like, or like that I will never overcome this mental illness that has taken over my life. And that would lead me into self-loathing, self-deprecating behavior. But that was just certainly not the case. Like, I am my greatest critic, and my mind has created more doubt in myself and hindered my ability to be confident and succeed than any other person who has hurt me or the traumatic experiences that I have endured in my life. And I learned that if I have control over my mind and the mental resilience to deafen the voices of my demons, like, no one can hurt me or cause me to like self-doubt.
Yeah, and it's like the way you yourself respond to those things that other people say in the way that you receive them, because you can use them to make yourself better and just like ignore the bad things that other people say to you, or you can just like overthink them and make them like, you know, like you said, like live rent free in your brain. And it's just like, it's the way you ultimately have the ability to determine what you want to do with those thoughts and what you want to do with things that people say to you. And you can use them as fuel to make you a better person and propel yourself forward, and as motivation, instead of just like wallowing in those feelings and just like using them as, oh my gosh, is that really what they think of me? Like, am I really this? Make you question yourself. Like, sometimes you can use them to grow, and there's sometimes when it's just not healthy to like overthink what other people say, and it's actually better to block out those opinions that are just making you hate yourself more. And you said, you talked about those thoughts that like haunted you, and actually like that's some, when I was really depressed, I had, like I said before, like I had really bad insomnia, and I couldn't sleep because I couldn't stop thinking of like these thoughts that like were burdening me. And like, I agree with you, they bring up traumatic memories and make me relive these bad experiences too. And whenever this happens to me, I feel like I deserve to feel this way. Like, I deserve to suffer with my thoughts that like haunt me. In order for them to go away, I have to like outthink them or like rationalize with myself and all the reasons why I'm a worthless human. But they just keep coming back. And I learned that like overthinking these bad thoughts isn't good either. Like, it's good to talk back to them, but it isn't good to constantly make them define who you are. And, you know, like, these bad memories, some of them have helped me grow, but I learned that a lot of them, it's just not worth thinking about, and that, you know, they'll eventually go away, and that just reliving them actually never makes them go away, and actually just makes them worse and more vivid. I used to think this, had this really bad mindset, like, if I think about them now, then I won't ever need to think about them again type of mindset, which was really bad. Yeah, which is really bad, which I need to learn to move forward and look towards the future instead of, you know, looking back, since that wasn't healthy for me. And actually, I always felt like these, whenever, like, I would, like, remember some really bad traumatic experiences in my life, I just felt like it was like this dark cloud that just hovered above me. And it's like, oh, time to think about these thoughts, because it's just like, they're coming back. And
exactly,
like, I would have, and the only way to get away from them, especially with COVID, since like there's like not that many distractions now when you can't like go anywhere and you're kind of like stuck inside your house. And I just felt like sleep was the best escape for me. And I just slept so much in summer and like at the beginning of when like quarantine started. I just felt like sleep was like this like little death that like allowed me to just die for a little bit and then come back to life, and just allowed me to forget about life for a moment and to just get away from the world around me and not exist for a few hours. And it feels so good to have that temporary outlet where I can escape those thoughts and worries and burdens inside of my head and block out the people in your life. But like, that was when I hit a really like low point in my life, and that was the only way I could really get these thoughts out of my head and not think of them. That was a point in my life where sleep was the only method or way I could stop having these like haunting memories that come back to me.
Yeah, I remember in like middle school, like it got to a point where I would get spaced out for like 20 minutes, like at a time, and just become like numb because I was afraid of like doing the things I love, and like doing my schoolwork or anything like that I cared about, and like even talking to like the people I cared about, because like those demons would just like those thoughts that Emily was talking about, like those demons would just pour into my head and like cloud my thinking. And whenever I had to like think deeply, they would just like pop in my head and I would have to like face them, and that scared me. So I just started like
so scary.
Yeah. I just start like pouring my heart into like what I'm passionate about, like my heart and soul into like my training, because it's like what I love to do. When I would like work out, like I would be able to like actively see myself encountering these demons and like facing them, like conquering the fear of having them like control how I thought and like felt. Like doing that day in and day out, like built that confidence that like I am not afraid to face my demons and like attack them, just like attack, like actively attacking them just made me feel mentally stronger. So I would like willingly put myself through like physical pain, through like working out to fight off my demons. And that was just like what I found out to like work for me. Like a lot of people, especially like the environment that I grew up in, there's a stigma around mental health where having a mental illness was like a weakness. But trichotillomania made me mentally stronger. I became mentally stronger when I wasn't afraid to look within myself with all my demons and be vulnerable with myself. And to my own criticism, like, which is the hardest like thing to do, especially because like I'm my own worst critic. And I used to think that caring about mental health and like recognizing that you had a mental health issue like meant that you were weak, because I've learned to realize that it actually means that I'm brave enough to truly look at all my demons with all my anxieties, insecurities, and my flaws, and really understand myself mentally to like figure out how to control my mind. I realized that I'm never going to get rid of all my demons, but once I start to recognize them, I start to understand what my triggers were and what made me like mentally weak, like where I would be so like submissive to these like subconscious behaviors. So then I started to use those weaknesses like as an advantage to free my mind from like the anxieties and those thoughts that trigger my trichotillomania. And ultimately I realized that I'm stronger for having the guts to face that inner critic. So I learned that my mental illness can be my greatest weakness or my greatest strength and like advantage if I let it. And when I started to utilize what like triggered me as a way to understand how my mind works and to control my mind to make me mentally stronger and like resistant to those triggers, I felt like I had achieved like mental freedom. It like helped me destigmatize the idea that like mental illness is only for the mentally weak. Because ultimately, I learned that by understanding my triggers and my mental weaknesses and flaws, I was like truly able to free my mind. Like I started to become mentally free when I practice being mentally in control and disciplined by triggers so that I wouldn't be controlled by like my urges and submitting to like unhealthy cope mechanisms. Like I no longer felt chained and like burdened by my self-doubt and like worries and like all these insecurities that my anxiety like made up. Like being in control of like my emotions and feelings and thoughts, I would like be like high on life one day, right? And then all of a sudden, this cloud of anxiety would just come over me and just tell me, just remind me of all of like the reasons why I hate myself. And being in control of my thoughts and really looking into like why those anxieties, those like anxious thoughts like came up and would just like come over me, made me more mentally free. And I noticed that I started to love myself more because then I wasn't worrying and hating myself for the impulsive, like uncontrollable behavior that was a result of like my mental illness. Like I became more like in tune and more like accepting myself. Like I was a part of my reactions and emotional behavior. And it's not just like a separate part of me. Like, I started to love myself when I understood why I had these subconscious behaviors. And like, you know, being in control of like why I responded and react certain ways to triggers, and like learned that my self-deprecation like occurred when I don't like the person I am. Like when I'm by myself, like I can't hide or distract my feelings and emotions by engaging in like activities that distract me. Because like when I'm with my friends and that facade I put up, when I suppress those raw feelings that make me vulnerable, like the more I understand my thoughts and like I'm vulnerable, the less I'm like afraid of being alone with myself. Like being alone with myself, like Emily and I always talk about this. It's just like one of my greatest fears. Like that's why I hated, like where even when I'm like super tired, I hated going to sleep because I would be just
so all restless.
Those, yeah, all those worries, those anxious thoughts that just like those demons that I have to constantly face with when I'm by myself, and those thoughts just pour into my mind.
But it was also we were so lucky because we shared a room, and whenever we had these like haunting thoughts come up while we were like in bed, we would just like, you know, wake each other up and we would like talk about it when we were little. Like we would just talk about it and she would give me input and help me like understand what I was feeling. And I'm so happy I had that, because that support made me understand what I was thinking better. So I wasn't scared to be alone all the time.
Yeah, like sometimes I just have to put my mind in an environment and like a position where there's nowhere that I can hide from my thoughts. Like, and I'm forced to like face my haunting and like burdening thoughts and to like actually confront them where dealing with them like inside my head is like my only option. Like I can't escape from it. Like through this process, I learned to strengthen my mind. So like I'm no longer afraid of being alone with those thoughts, because I've learned to face that fear so that I'm in control of them. And it helps me to understand that they're not as scary as like I make them out to be, because your anxiety will always make up like these false worries that things are always worse than there actually are.
Yeah, and when you were talking about like how mental illness is not like a representation of someone being mentally weak, and also being mentally strong isn't the same as being mentally healthy either, because even people with strong mental muscles can develop anxiety and depression, because mental strength is often confused with mental health, because we live in this culture that values like the pull yourself up by your bootstraps mentality that anyone, like for decades, anyone that struggled with depression or anxiety was considered mentally weak. And being mentally stable or not showing any emotion usually meant that someone was mentally healthy. But I think that that's where there's this confusion that can improve your mental health. But a lot of people don't realize that it doesn't necessarily guarantee that you won't ever develop a mental illness, because being mentally strong means that you know how to manage your emotions and reframe these negative and unproductive thoughts into something more positive. If you look at mental strength and compare it to physical strength, for example, then it might make more sense, because like you can run and lift weights to strengthen your muscles, like your physical muscles, but that doesn't guarantee that you're never going to develop an injury or a physical health issue. Because someone that works out daily might encounter like high blood pressure or diabetes. And being mentally strong is a good thing, because it challenges your negative thoughts, but it isn't always a direct correlation to being mentally healthy. Because for me, it meant embracing uncomfortable emotions instead of trying to escape them or ignore these feelings that made me feel down. In middle school, I remember...
Exactly. Suppressing them is never the answer.
Never. And also, like, suppressing your symptoms. Like, it's so hard when people are like, can you just stop pulling your hair? Like I can't just stop pulling my hair. And it's, like, a mental illness. And it's just, like, second nature. It was, like, an instinct if I was stressed out. Like, that was... Like, right away, I would just pull my hair. Like, it was just a coping mechanism that I didn't even realize was there. I didn't even realize that I was doing it sometimes. And... yeah, like in middle school, I remember like using these bad self-talk moments and turning them into self-deprecating behavior, like starving myself or forcing myself to wallow in this depressed state of mind while I just did things that were distractions and stuff that I thought was making me better. But then I started to change my emotional state into developing healthy self-talk. And
that made me become the best version of myself that I could be at the moment.
Yeah, seeking mental freedom like helped me realize that I deserve to have good things. Like, I'm allowed to have a stress-free and happy life. Like Emily was saying, how we'd always engage in these self-deprecating behaviors where, because we felt like because we had a mental illness, we were weak and we were worthless. We didn't deserve to like have good things and be happy.
Yeah, and mental health is not a weakness because it helps you understand yourself better. And it takes a lot to make positive changes in your life when you're trying to manage the effects of mental health issues. Because it's like, I always felt like these worries and these burdens and these thoughts just like pulled me like on a leash, and it just affected everything I did on like a day-to-day life. And it just, everything revolved around my like mental illness. And it takes strength and persistence to, you know, push yourself through. And it takes a lot of courage to prioritize your mental health, like your physical health. And encountering these obstacles, like the social stigma attached to mental health issues and fighting them, makes you a strong person, because reaching out also helps you, because like it helped me become so much stronger, because it took a lot of bravery and willpower to admit that I was struggling with something that is bigger than I could deal with. And that ability to accept that you have an issue is so strong and powerful, and it takes so much courage.
Yeah, Emily and I's recovery journey with trichotillomania has significantly improved once we learned to shift our mindset from looking at our mental illness as a weakness that has weighed us down into a strength. And we encourage all of you guys listening today to do the same. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen in on our podcast today. We really appreciate it.
If you like the show, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts. It helps more people find the show, and it helps us to share our message of mental wellness to people in our community. And if you want to hear more of It's Okay to Feel, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app.
Be kind and lead with an open mind.